to, you know, it's Thanksgiving weekend and it's Hanukkah, so it's not Hanukkah yet. We still have a couple of weeks, but it has Rosh Chodesh Kislev overlapping with Thanksgiving. It's as good as we can get. A few years ago, there was Hanukkah overlapping with Thanksgiving. That's incredibly rare, and apparently the way the stars are moving, it's never going to happen again. So we had that very rare moment when Hanukkah actually overlapped with Thanksgiving. So can't rely on that happening. But having Rosh Chodesh Kislev on Thanksgiving is enough of a kesher for us. I got the opportunity to say Hodul Hashem Ki Tov many times, to say Hallel on Thanksgiving. That's all very useful. And Hanukkah is, in terms of its theme, so the Jewish Thanksgiving. And truth is, it also has some overlaps with the Parsha, which maybe we'll save for Parsha discussion. But the concept of Hodah on Hanukkah is very central. And we have a mitzvah to display that Hodah through lighting candles. And the lighting of candles, we spoke last week about the structure and the Mahadran and Mahadran, Mina Mahadran. But one point to emphasize is that the Rambam has a tremendous chumrah associated with Neir's Chanukah. He writes that when it comes to Neir Chanukah, it's a tremendous priority. We have to do whatever we can in order to make sure that we are able to light Chanukah candles. And even if we can't afford it, even somebody who doesn't have any resources to pay for Chanukah candles, shol psachim u'mocher k'suso. He should knock on the doors, he should sell his clothes, he should do whatever it takes in order to fulfill what he calls a mitzvah chavivi admol. And this is a very beloved mitzvah. So we should do whatever we can in order to fulfill it. And just to connect it to last week, so it's interesting that there is a machlokes by proxy between the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. In each case, it's in terms of interpretation. Neither one is explicit. But the Shulchan Aruch quotes this din also. So last week we talked about the Hiddur of Chanukah and whether it is something that is grafted onto the mitzvah itself, or is it a add-on like Hiddur mitzvah usually would be. So this idea that one should go begging for Neir's Chanukah, does that apply also to the extra candles? Or should we say that if the Gemara says Iker mitzvah, Neir mitzvah's Chanukah, Neir Yishuveso, that the mitzvah itself is just one candle per day, so maybe it only makes sense to say that you should go begging for one candle. But if you have one candle, there's no need to go to extremes for anything more. So that could be a machlokas, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, because it's all subject to interpretation. But in terms of the Shulchan Aruch, so the Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha quotes the Chemed Moshe, that it's only for one candle. That beyond one candle, we're not going to tell you to go begging. But the Or Sameach was medayik in the Rambam, that the Rambam thinks for all the candles. How could that be? You're saying because it's all the Hiddur. So that idea, Rav Zolti has a discussion about this, that he understood it to mean that the Rambam sees the Hiddur of Chanukah as being part of the mitzvah itself, and not an add-on like by other things. It's not like a nice lulav or a nice tzitzis, but it is fundamentally built into the mitzvah.
Do you have that by Esrog?
So by Esrog, we don't have such a din that you have it by Esrog, so there's a bigger kasha you can ask from Esrog, which we'll get to in a second. So you can ask the question even more. But just in terms of one candle versus more candles, so the Bir Halacha, according to the Chaim and Moshe, takes the position that you're instinctively taking. It doesn't make sense if it's a hiddur. How could you say that you have to go begging for a hiddur? And if the Rambam indeed believes, like the Rosh Hashanah understands him, the Rosh Hashanah is focusing on the fact that the language of the Rambam is Shol Apsachim Ocher Ksuso Velokech Neros, plural. Mayor will say, it means for every day, the whole package. But this, again, that's why I'm not saying this with full confidence that I'm sure there's a machlokus in Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch about this. But I'm saying it's a machlokus by proxy, that the way the Or Sameach understands the Rambam versus the way that the Chamed Moshe understands the Shulchan Aruch. Certainly arguable. But the idea would be that the way Rav Schulte explained it, that the Rambam sees it as particularly grafted into the mitzvah. Last week we suggested a different explanation, that maybe it's not so much like that, but the Rambam sees the commitment to Hiddur as being unique when it comes to Hanukkah as opposed to everything else. And here we're not talking about the format of the Hiddur, we're talking about the commitment. We're saying whether you have to go to great lengths to do it, so that could be consistent with that explanation as well. But that set that point aside. Yes, sir.
Are there other instances, like for filthy, as hiddur being an integral component?
No, you don't really have that. That's the thing. So, I mean, in general, there is a discussion by hiddur, and there are other issues you could look into when hiddur plays a more fundamental role and when it's more of a added component. There's what to discuss about that. You know, it could be that different areas of halacha do maybe have different focuses. But the question was being posed in terms of Hanukkah. Does Hanukkah have a unique relationship to Hiddur? So what we suggested last week is that either there is a unique format completely, that there is a whole different approach to Hiddur that is not comparable to anything else, or it is comparable, but there's still a unique level of commitment. Requires us to go to greater lengths in order to do it. So that's a detail, whether it applies to one candle or all the candles. But there's another question you could ask here. Does this make sense to you to say that you should go begging for Neres Chanukah? Is that something that strikes you as obvious? Or is there a kasha you could ask on that? Levi's already shaking his head.
Something like
Sakana
Stefashos.
Okay.
Like, that takes precedence over.
So it's not your
Hergo Yavar. It's not really Yarago Yavar issue.
Right.
So I mean, to say that you're going to go like make yourself destitute.
Okay, so now just parenthetically, because you brought up Sakana, so this is a whole different discussion, but it's interesting that clearly we do worry about Sakana.
With candles.
With candles. And in fact, the Gemara says that the whole format of Neres Chanukah changed because of a sakana, which has not fully developed what that sakana is. Rishonim explained it in different ways, but it used to be that we were supposed to light outside the house, and then they changed because of the sakana, says the Gemara, that the candles were brought inside the house. And that's a whole sugya in itself. Maybe if we have time we could talk about that whole sugya, about the before and after of where the candles are lit. But in any event, so this idea, how much time do we have today? Do we set up, do we have a official, okay, 12:30 makes sense? Is that, okay, you guys have, right, also maybe watch the weather, but hopefully we'll be able to make it home. But there is a bigger question you could ask here, right, that so you mentioned Meir Esrog. So what's the halacha by Esrog? What if I can't afford an Esrog? Ah, so what you're alluding to in a very terse way is that there is a Gemara in Maseches Ksubis, which we apply to mitzvot. But the Gemara says in Ksubis that Hamavazves, it's referring to tzedakah on the surface, Hamavazves, Al Yavazves, Yosem Michomesh. That when it comes in that context talking about tzedakah, so you're trying to figure out how much tzedakah to give. So we recommend giving 10%. But we also have an upper limit of 20%. So somebody should not give more than 20% of his money to tzedakah. There are a ton of exceptions, but for the average person making an average income, shouldn't give more than 20% at tzedakah, because we're concerned he will bankrupt himself and end up on the public roll himself. So for it comes to tzedakah, the Gemara says not to give more than 20%, and the Ramah quotes this in the context of mitzvos. That when it comes to mitzvos also, it's not just about tzedakah, when it comes to mitzvos, you're not obligated more than 20%. So if that's the case, so that's true by a mitzvah daraisa. And so if somebody can't afford tefillin, so then he's exempt. Doesn't have to pay more than a fifth of his money for tefillin. And you mentioned esrog, or I guess we started the conversation with esrog. So it happens to be this Ramah that quotes this idea is in Hilchos Lulav. And he explains there that this is true even for a mitzvah overis. So even you have a mitzvah like esrog and sukkos is tomorrow. And if you don't get to esrog by tomorrow, that's it for the year. Still, we have this limitation. You might think that if it's a one-time mitzvah that's going to pass, then maybe we should be more machmir about it. But no, if it costs more than a fifth, you are pater. So, parenthetically, the Ramah says that this is true only for positive mitzvahs. And that when it comes to a losa, say, so then you have to do whatever it takes not to violate a losa, say, even give up kohon beso, even give up everything. The Vilna Gaon didn't agree with that distinction. There is some discussion to be had whether or not that's actually the bottom line as far as los haseis are concerned. But at least as far as mitzvah sasei, that's what the Ramah says, you only have to spend a fifth. So one could ask, how do you explain this by Hanukkah then? Because Hanukkah, is that a mitzvah daraisa? It's a mitzvah derabbanan, we understand. So how could it be that here we're talking about a mitzvah derabbanan, and we say whatever it takes, that's what you have to pay. And even if you have zero, then you have to do whatever you need to in order to obtain it. While if it's a mitzvah menat Torah, like esrog, you don't have to spend more than a fifth of your money. You hear the question. So it's a pretty major question. And there are a lot of approaches. And a lot of discussion about this round, but we're not going to go through all of them today. But just to discuss one or two mahalchim. So there's a surface answer the Magid Mishnah gives. The Magid Mishnah on the side of the Rambam says, why is Chanukah special? Because of Pirsumei Nisa. Because we want to publicize the miracle. And there's a mocker for this. So even though the Gemara doesn't say this explicitly about Neres Chanukah, but the idea that there is this extra chumrah involving begging, possibly, for a Pirsumei Nisa, what's the source? It's a Mishnah in Psachim. Anyone know what I'm talking about? The first Mishnah, the 10th parak of Psachim, Adav Tzadi Tes. So the Mishnah there says that Afilu Oni Halokeach Menatamchoi, even somebody who is needy and who gets his meals from the soup kitchen, Lo yufchos lo midalei kosos shel yayin. He should not have less than 4 cups of wine. Now, it's not clear that he has to ask from tzedakah in order to do any other mitzvah. But dalei kosos, again, a mitzvah derabbanan. So there he's obligated to obtain, even if it means asking for tzedakah. Parenthetically, those of you who are in smicha or who are in taking smicha, so this relates to the famous story of the Beis Halevi that they teach you in rabbi school. I want to teach you how to be a good posek. So they teach you the story about the Beis Halevi. That the Beis Halevi was approached by a woman before Pesach. She said that she can't afford wine. And she's wondering if she could drink milk for the dalei kosos. What does milk have to do with wine? So Gemara says that milk can make you drowsy. It's a little bit like it's intoxicating. So she asked this question, can she use milk instead? So the Beis Halevi said, no, shouldn't use milk, should use wine, but it's okay, I'll give you tzedakah, I'll give you money to pay for wine. And he reaches into his wallet, and he takes out a lot more than the price of wine. So the students saw this, they said, Rabbi, we saw how much you gave. Why did you give so much? So what's the answer?
Well, if he couldn't afford wine, so then probably couldn't have been able to afford... Or no, if it was milk, so then if she was going to drink milk for a dollar kosos, then... I think it was a woman, the story. Then she probably was going to have meat before, because there's the whole, milk exfoliation thing, you can't...
Well, you're almost there, but right, so she probably wasn't going to have meat before.
Yeah, she probably wasn't going to have meat before, so then she wasn't going to have meat before, then, she probably couldn't afford that, so...
Right, so it sounds like she was planning on having a parv seder. Yeah. So it wasn't just the wine she couldn't afford, it was the food, it was the fleishik she couldn't afford. So that's what they teach you, you should be a sensitive listener, that you should realize what the question behind the question is, so... She's not just asking about milk. She's really saying that she can't afford meat either. So that's what he was able to understand. He gave her money for the meat also. So this whole story is because the Mishnah says that dalet kosos, if you can't afford them, you should ask for tzedakah. So says the Magid Mishnah, so here you have it, that there are mitzvos that are classified as persumei nisa. And therefore... one has to go to great extremes in order to fulfill them, even if it means asking for tzedakah. So the problem with the answer is, though, it doesn't really answer the question. It just recategorizes the question. Just shifts the question over. Because our question was that Neres Chanukah is a mitzvah d'rabbana. Why should you be obligated to go to such lengths for a mitzvah d'rabbana? And the answer, all we said was, well, it's part of a group of mitzvot d'rabbanan where we have this. So it doesn't answer the question, it just shifts it into a category which you could ask the same question about the category. So why should it be true that when it comes to persumei nisa as a whole, the whole group, why should it be true that there should be an obligation to go to such extremes? So just to mention, let's say, two mahalchim about this. So Rav Shechter has quoted from Rav Soloveitchik that he thought the point was that why are we involved in persumei nisa in the first place? Why is persumei nisa important? So he understood that persumei nisa is really a type of tefillah. That essentially we're saying we have benefited from miracles in the past. We like miracles. We want more miracles. Keep them coming. So if that's the point, it's a little bit incongruous to say that we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go outside of his budget, kaviyachol, that he runs the world normally al pi darach hateva, and we're saying go above and beyond and pull off a miracle for us. And in order to make that point, we have allotted exactly 19.999% of our budget, not 1 cent over. That essentially, if we are asking for something me'al ha'teva, if we're asking for the bonus shalom to go outside of his budget, we also have to go outside of our budget. We also have to be ready to go above and beyond in order to make this point. So that's one possibility. Yeah. Persumei nisa is driven by this message that we ask for more because we're willing to push ourselves. There's another mahalach which ties into a lot of other things. The Avnei Nezer has a tshuva, Aruch Chaim, where he basically makes the following point. Says the Avnei Nezer, this idea of not spending more than a fifth on mitzvos, what kind of a concept is that? So the idea is essentially one of onus. And then we know, we say onus rachmona patre. I spoke about that a little bit in some of our sugyas. We say that if a person is unable to fulfill a mitzvah, so he's exempt. So the chiddush of Chomesh is to say that if it's going to cost you that much, if it's going to cost you a fifth of what you have, so then that's essentially impossible. You are off the hook because you're an onus, because you can't do anything about it. So explains the Avnei Nezer, if that's the operative factor here, onus. So then we should say onus Rachmana Patre only regarding that which is between you and God. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he knows what you're trying to do. He knows what you're trying to accomplish. So if you try, you're doing everything you can, but you just can't go that far. So then he can credit you. He can credit you for what you're trying. But human beings cannot. Human beings don't have the ability to read your mind and know what you're trying. So therefore, they need actual results. Now, somewhat parenthetically, this is why there's a whole trend among the Achronim to say that there's no concept of ones when it comes to mitzvos ben adam l'chaveiro. That when you're dealing with other people, it doesn't help to say you're trying. It has to actually happen. You have to actually accomplish the mitzvah. So let's say if somebody needs staka, if somebody is starving and about to collapse, and they need a meal, and you have a good excuse why you can't give them a meal, it's still going to collapse. It's not going to help that you have a good excuse. So onus Rachmana Patre, that's Rachmana Patre, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can let you off the hook. But a human being is not going to be able to let you off the hook because he doesn't get the benefit that he needs. So there is a whole discussion like that in terms of mitzvos ben adam l'chaveiro. Chaim Shmulevitz has an important sicha about this when he talks about Penina. You know, Penina was married to the husband, the other wife of the husband of Chana, and Chana, we read the Haftorah and Rosh Hashanah, that she didn't have any children, and Penina had a lot of children, and we read that Penina used to taunt Chana over not having children. And that seems and is incredibly cruel. And yet, the Gemara in Bava Basra, the end of the first part, the Gemara says, Penina l'shem shamayim nisgavna. That Penina meant well. And that's a shocking idea, because is the Gemara really defending her? That somehow she had some plan that if she makes life miserable enough for Chana, she'll daven harder. Is that really defensible? Is that what the Gemara is saying? So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says, Asicha, where he explains, he says, no, the Gemara is not defending her, it's quite the opposite. The Gemara is saying that it doesn't matter. The fact that she meant well is not a defense, because when you're dealing with human beings, intentions are not enough. If you inflict pain upon them, then that pain is real. It doesn't matter that you had good intentions. And as he put it, that if you stick your hand in an oven and you mean well, when you take your hand out, it still burns. Not any less burnt because you meant well. So too, when dealing with people in general, you always have to worry about what the real world results are. We don't say onus rachmana patre. So that's by mitzvos ben adam l'chaveiro. Is Hanukkah mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro?
There's a presuming nisa aspect that maybe yes.
So that's what he wants to suggest. That essentially, presuming nisa, you wouldn't really categorize that as a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, but you would categorize it as a mitzvah that involves other people.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, it involves communication. And communication has to actually happen. You can't imagine that somebody's going to walk past your house on Hanukkah and say, well, there's no menorah in the window. But I imagine that he would want to put a menorah, he just couldn't afford one, so therefore I'll tell myself about the miracle. It doesn't work if you have to actually communicate with somebody, so then you have to actually have it there. So if that's the case, so then maybe that's what's behind this notion that we have to show up Sachem, Bochers, Ksuso, we have to go to such lengths in order to be able to accomplish this mitzvah of Chanukah and the related ideas. Now there is a approach to extend this to. There's a medrash that most people aren't aware of. It's a pretty shocking medrash. But J.J. Schachter wrote an article about this in Mitoch Ohel, in Parshas Hazinu, if I remember correctly. He notes there's a medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu actually could have gone into the land of Israel if he wanted to, but the deal was he would no longer be the leader of the Jewish people. That if he was willing to go in as a balabas of Yeshua, so then he could have entered, but that wasn't the deal he was ready to take. So that's probably a little surprising from our whole picture of the whole story. So the truth is, you can maybe give a lumdish explanation to that idea. Because there's a discussion in the Sefer Paris Yosef HaChadash on, I think that's Hanan, he has this discussion. Sefer Paris Yosef in general is a Sefer on Chumash that is malakid from all over. It's a fascinating Sefer. It has all kinds of very interesting things that are quoted in it. So that Sefer only goes up to Vayikra. So there's a contemporary Machaber who's unbelievably prolific by David Mandelbaum, who finished out the set. And he wrote big volumes on Bamidbar and Dvarim. I think in the Paris Yosef HaChadash and Bas Hanan maybe has this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu is davening to go into Eretz Yisrael, and he's not being allowed in. So the Gemara in Sota says that why did he want to go in so desperately? Was it because of the shawarma and the ragalach? Probably not. The Gemara calls it peiros, but I assume that was their version of shawarma and ragalach back then. So what was it really the peiros? Was it the food that he was so plotting to have? So Gemara says, no, it was the mitzvahs ha'fluyus baretz, that the mitzvahs he couldn't fulfill in chutz la'aretz, so he wanted to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael to fulfill them. So one could ask, and it's kind of a technical approach, so then you can ask a technical kasha on that, because emotionally we understand why Moshe wanted to go into the land. But if you want to take this kind of technical approach, that it was about that, so then let's take a technical question. And don't we say that onus rachmana patre? Ein lecha onus gadol mizeh. He couldn't have a better doctor's note than this. That here he's begging the Ribbono Shel Olam to be given the opportunity, and the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "No, I'm not letting you in." So, what greater doctor's note could you possibly have? What greater excuse could you possibly have? It was clearly out of his hands. So, why was he pushing so hard? So he quotes there an idea, maybe based on this Avnei Nezer, that if we assume that Persumei Nisa, you can't rely on onus, it has to actually happen. So he suggests, there's a little bit of a stretch, that by Moshe Rabbeinu, he saw all the mitzvos as having a Persumei Nisa component for him. Because he was the leader of Chal Yisrael, he was the Rebbe of Chal Yisrael, he had to teach them all the mitzvos. And if he's not able to teach the mitzvos, there's something fundamentally lacking. So he wanted to be able to go in so that he could fulfill all the mitzvos, because he saw that as having a Persumei Nisa-like component. It was his job to actually display them. So if that's the vort, again, coming from a technical approach to a technical position, but if that's the vort, so it actually works with that medrash, so that Moshe was pushing so hard because he was saying, as the Manig of Klal Yisrael, I have to be able to be there to fulfill this. But if he wasn't going to be the Manig of Klal Yisrael anyway, so then it wasn't necessarily so important to push for it. And indeed, Onus Rachmana Patra. Okay, could be. So this idea is interesting, and maybe that's why we have this special Chumrah when it comes to Neres Chanukah. But could also maybe explain something else. So when it comes to Purim, right, what are the mitzvahs of Persumei Nisa? So we have Neres Chanukah, and we have Dalakosos, and also Kriyas and Megillah. is Mishum Persumei Nisim. So when it comes to Kriyas Megillah, so it's usually not so expensive for the average person because he can just show up in any shul where they're laying the Megillah. But there might be a relevance to this anyway, because the Mishnah says in Megillah that, the Gemara says in Megillah, that Mevatlin Mikra Megillah, Mevatlin Avoda, Mevatlin Avoda Mishum Mikra Megillah. So what does that din mean? What do the words mean?
You miss work.
Well, if Avoda means work, but here Avoda is based on Mikdash. Sorry?
Daven.
So, but here, before Daven means the Karbanos. So it says, Mevatlin Avoda is based on Mikdash, Mishum Mikra Megillah. So what does that mean? So one might think that it means that if you only have the ability to do one thing that day, for whatever reason, you're either going to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, or you're going to read the Megillah, that Mikra Megillah is going to win. That's what it sounds like it means, right? Mevatlin will cancel the Avodah Mishum Mikra Megillah. So that's what it sounds like it means. But some Rishonim, most of the Rishonim really say, can't mean that. That Mikra Megillah is an obligation midrabbana. Avoda is a chiyuv min haTorah. So how could it be that Megillah should win out over the Avoda? So Tosfos, for example, over there says what it means is that there is, it can't be that you're going to choose one over the other. It must mean that normally you would do the Avoda first thing in the morning. There's reason, like Dima the Mitzvahs, it's the first thing that's done in the day. And when it's Purim, so we'll read the Megillah before. And that will give it Chashivas, because you're pushing off the Avodah for Mikra Megillah, so that's a part of the Persumei Nisah. But it wouldn't mean that we cancel the Avodah completely, because that wouldn't make any sense. But the Gemara does use the language Mavatlin, kind of sounds like you're canceling it. So some point to this Tosfos as a proof that Zrizus is so important, that doing things at the earliest opportunity is so crucial, that when you delay it, we also call that Mevatlin. Even though it's not an actual bittel of the mitzvah, but it's just delaying it, the language of bittel makes sense there also, despite that. So that's one position that a lot of the Rishonim hold. But there is a minority view in the Rishonim that it means exactly what it sounds like. That we would actually choose Megillah reading instead of the Avodah, despite the fact that the Avodah is Min HaTorah and Megillah is Drabbah. So how do you explain that? So the Taz says, well, maybe Megillah is not really Drabbah, because when it comes to Megillah, it's Divrei Kabbalah. I discussed the concept of Divrei Kabbalah recently.
Yeah, it's not quite Doraisa.
Right.
It's more than Rabbah.
It's scriptural. It's in Pesukim. So because the Pesukim and Megillas Esther make reference to all the mitzvahs of Purim, so therefore they're all scriptural. They all have a source in verses. And there is a view that some have that we treat Divrei Kabbalah like Divrei Torah, based on the line in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. So, okay, so you could say that it is like Divrei Torah. But then you still have to figure out exactly what the dynamics are here. So maybe we could say that, let's go back to the same principle here. And let's say that the whole kadimus of Persumei Nisah, the whole significance of Persumei Nisah, is because we treat it like a Ben Adam L'Chavero, like the Avnei Nezer is saying, and therefore it means that we have to actually get it done. So a position that says if we have to choose one or the other, if we have to choose Megillah or Avoda, we'll choose the Megillah. What does that signify? Not that it's more important in the general sense. A mitzvah d'oraisa presumably is still more important than a mitzvah d'rabbanan. But we still have to prioritize the mitzvah d'rabbanan because it can't be replaced. When it comes to the avodah, so that the Kadosh Baruch Hu can say, all right, I credit you with because it was impossible to do otherwise. But when it comes to the prasumanisa of Megillah, we don't have that option. So therefore, we have to actually get it out, and that's going to give it a different prioritization.
Which I think is just interesting just to think about, because it highlights when we prioritize things, we don't always prioritize based on importance.
There are other factors to prioritize. So I think we've discussed, maybe the question came up a few weeks ago or months ago, about some time management issues. And I think we talked about the fact that there are different quadrants, as the experts point out, and there's the quadrant, there's the whole axis of importance. There are things that are important and not important. And there's the axis of urgency, and they're not exactly the same. Some things are urgent but not important, and important but not urgent, and the like. So here, we're not making a decision based on importance. We're making a decision based on something like urgency, urgency in the sense that there's not going to be another way to deal with it. So just like a ringing phone is urgent, because if you don't answer it now, it won't be here later, but it's not necessarily important. So here, Birkat Megillah is obviously important, but it's not more important than the Avodah, but it is more urgent than the Avodah, because otherwise we're not going to be able to accomplish its goal with anything else. So this idea of Persimonisa having a unique chashivas to it, or a unique prioritization to it, that requires us to go to great lengths in order to fulfill it, that maybe could explain a couple of halachas, could explain this idea of shol ha'psachim mocher es tksuso, and it could explain the idea of why, at least according to a minority view, Mikra Megillah would take priority over the Avodas Beis HaMikdash. Now, what's particularly relevant to us all year round, outside of Hanukkah, is that the Gemara does say in Masechta Shabbos, after we have emphasized that there's such a priority to Neres Hanukkah, and it's Prasumenisa, so we take it so seriously, and we go above and beyond in order to make sure to accomplish it. So you would think that that should take priority over all other mitzvahs. And yet the Gemara says that's not necessarily the case, that Ner Chanukah does lose to another mitzvah. What's that? Ner Shabbos. That's what it seems like. Gemara says that if you have to choose between Ner Chanukah and Ner Beso, which sounds like it's a reference to Ner Shabbos, so Ner Shabbos win. Why did Ner Shabbos win?
Nice.
So Mishum Shalom Beso. That's how the Gemara understands that it connects to Shalom Bayis. Now this is a fascinating concept to consider on many different levels. Because first of all, it's not clear where Shalom Bayis comes in. That the institution of Ner Shabbos is one which, there's a discussion of Brisker Rav and others note, could be categorized as a function of Onik Shabbos. It's something that we have so that our Shabbos experience will be more pleasant. Could be understood as a function of Kavod Shabbos. It's something that we do before Shabbos in order that our Shabbos will be better prepared. But where does Shalom Bayis come in? How does Shalom Bayis have anything to do with Ner Shabbos? So here it's interesting. Some of the Rishonim explain that basically it's a concern Shlo Yikashel Be'etz Ve'Evin, that we're worried that if it's dark in the house and people can't see, so they're going to trip over the furniture and that'll be bad. This is all fascinating for so many reasons. First of all, you call that Shalom Bayis. So it highlights a basic aspect of human nature that when we try to do things because of Shalom, there's all kinds of different directions Shalom can be attacked from. I have to protect Shalom in a lot of different ways. And this is a way we don't often think of, that sometimes, okay, you have a big issue that people are fighting over, and then we have to talk about what can give Mishum Shalom. But here we're just saying that when people are irritated, they're going to snap at each other. So if people are tripping over things, so that's going to put them in a mood that they're going to be more likely to snipe at each other. So if we want to try to keep the household peaceful, so we try to remove opportunities to have these kinds of sniping, to have these kinds of arguing. So therefore, the Ner Shabbos is going to take priority even over Ner Chanukah. So that's very striking, because we just came back from saying that Ner Chanukah is a huge priority, and you got to do whatever you can in order to be able to accomplish this. And now we're saying, but still, Ner Shabbos is an even greater priority than that, which is quite a fascinating point. It's also interesting that a lot, so much to explore on this idea and this whole dynamic, that it's very striking that you could say, if that's really the issue, so we're worried about people yelling at each other because they're tripping in the dark, so why is this a Shabbos issue? We should say any day of the week. If there's going to be a dark household and you have only one candle, can either be for Hanukkah or can be for Shabbos, so then, or if it be for the household, then you should have a light in the household. And say one candle, by the way, here that discussion comes up again. The Magen Avraham, I believe, writes that if you have two candles, so then you should have one for Hanukkah and one for, let's say, Shabbos, because the Iker Mitzvah of Hanukkah is one candle, so it wouldn't necessarily say make sure to have the Hiddur, but have one for each, let's say. And parenthetically, this whole discussion may also be more theoretical nowadays, because Svarim also point out that theoretically you could understand why you have to choose between Ner Hanukkah and Ner Shabbos, because they're mutually exclusive. Because when it comes to Neres Chanukah, so we say, Eilon Rishus L'Hishtamesh B'Hem. It's usur to benefit from them. And when it comes to Ner Shabbos, the whole point is that we should be able to see on Shabbos and to use them. So Ner Chanukah and Ner Shabbos are mutually exclusive. They have opposite purposes. However, nowadays, as we alluded to before, that the Takana changed, and we light inside. So some say this whole priority isn't really relevant anymore, because it meant either you'll light inside the house a candle so you have a lit house, or you will take the only candle you have and light a Hanukkah candle outside the house and you'll have a dark household. But nowadays, that you can light, that you do light the menorah for the most part on the inside of the house, so you're not really looking at the same kind of dynamic. And even though, yes, we still say that they're conceptually exclusive, that you're not supposed to be nana from there's Hanukkah and Shabbos candles are there for use. But still, having the candles in the house changes the whole issue here. So this whole dynamic might not really be relevant. This whole idea that you're going to have to choose between one or the other. But the idea that there is a Shalom Bayis consideration that overwhelms even this highly prioritized Neres Hanukkah is a fascinating point. And just parenthetically, just to give a sense of what it doesn't overcome, so when it comes to Kiddush, so we say that Neres Chanukah wins over Kiddush. And there's some discussion, the Avinezer talks about this in the Teshuva also, that why don't we say that when it comes to Kiddush, Kiddush is also Pirshumei Nisa, because it's Pirshumei Nisa about creation. So Kasha, some ask, why don't we say that if Pirshumei Nisa is so important, Kiddush should also be prioritized because of that. You hear the question? So there's an interesting discussion about that. My friend Rabbi Shlomo Sinneman has a discussion about this in his Sefer Esh Tamid on Breishis, the first parsha on Breishis. He talks about this question. One approach that some have is that a nace is something that goes against Teva. So you can't have a nes until you have a Teva. So the beginning of creation, you can't have any nisim. It's only once we have a created world, so then we can have a concept of a nes. But okay, in any event, so Kiddush doesn't win. The Taz has a very, again, parenthetical point. The Taz has a very machudish position on this. He says the reason that Kiddush doesn't win out over Neres Chanukah is because you don't actually have to spend any money on Kiddush, because if you don't have wine, you can make Kiddush on Challah. Aye, but what if you don't have challah? He says, oh, that's the problem, because Lecha Mishnah is Daraisa. Because he sees that as a pasuk, so he thinks Lecha Mishnah would actually win. Others disputed this. They disputed the whole idea that Lecha Mishnah is Daraisa. It's a whole different discussion. But it's just one of the other nooks and crannies that come out of this whole story. So Neres Chanukah seems to win over most things, but Neres Shabbos prevails over that because of this Shalom Bayis issue. So there's some, yeah.
Taz assuming that Kiddush is deraisa, Kishayayin is deraisa?
Right, see, Kiddush is deraisa, Kishayayin is not deraisa, which most Rishonim hold. The question of what's included in Zohar, Shema, Shabbos, Lakacho, one Sefer listed 15 different shitas among the poskim, what exactly is included in Zohar, Shema, Shabbos, Lakacho. So to say that wine is not deraisa, that's not such a surprise, that most Rishonim would say. But to say the Lecha Mishnah is deraisa, that's a bigger. It's a bigger chiddush. But in any event, so the idea of Neir Shabbos taking priority because of Shalom Bayis is very striking. But if it's really about that we're going to be fighting if you have a dark household, so you could ask another kasha on this, say that, well, why then only Shabbos? So it's not really about Shabbos, it's about people fighting because they're tripping over things. So any night of the week, we should say that if you only have one candle, and let's say it's before the changing of the takana, so you only have one candle, you're either going to have a dark household or light Hanukkah candles outside the house. So maybe we should prioritize having light in the house.
You always just light a candle.
But you don't have another candle.
That's or the thing. You get. Okay.
Right, so that's the question. So if you only have, you can only have one candle, you can only afford one candle. So maybe we should say that if it's prioritized Friday night, so then it should be prioritized any night of the week. So there are some who say like this, and the truth is, the language of the Gemara, I was trying to be careful how to say it before, the Gemara doesn't actually say that it's Friday night candles. The Gemara says, ner beso. So most assume that means Friday night candles. But could be read as any night of the week. And so there is a minority view like that really any night of the week it would win. And it's not specifically about Shabbos. And the Summer of Nelson Gestetner has a discussion about this, or others who have a lot written about, is that a viable read in the Gemara or not, that it'd be true any day of the week. But you could say that in the Hanami, that it's a concern any night of the week. But Chazal specifically made a takana because of Shabbos. That Shabbos, there is a particular focus on Shalom. And even though we don't want you fighting and sniping at each other any night of the week, but on Shabbos, Chazal went out of the way to say you have to make sure you'll have a peaceful household on Shabbos, even though all week long we recommend it too, but Shabbos especially. And the Shla understood the idea of the pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Vayakel, Lo Savaru Eish B'chol Mosh Vaseichem B'yom HaShabbos. So the Gemara in a few places tries to figure out why that's the one malacha that gets singled out. Why does Havara get identified by name rather than any other malacha? So the Gemara has a couple of angles on that, but the Shla writes, it's talking about emotional machlokas, that we shouldn't have emotional fire on Shabbos, and emotional fire is the fire of machlokas. So maybe we go out of our way to make sure that we're not going to have any kind of fighting on Shabbos, even as we're also concerned about that all week long, but it's a special takana specifically for the purposes of Shabbos. I'll just close by noting it's my father's yahrzeit this week, so I'll mention it later in the week, but I recently heard my brother-in-law quote from him and discussing this point about the idea of Neir's Shabbos having a connection to Shalom Bayis. So part of the idea is he
apparently explained it, is that if you want to relate to people and you want to have empathy for people, you have to be able to see them. When you can look in somebody's eyes and you can look at someone's face, so then you are able to be empathetic, you're able to express concern. And that's a part of why the flip side of it is now we find that there's such a lack of civility in the social media world and in the internet world, the digital world. And many explain this is based on the online disinhibition effect, that when you're not looking face-to-face with somebody, it's very easy to say things that are very hurtful and things that are quite damaging, because you don't really get a sense of their true feelings and you're not really connecting on that level. So in that sense also, Shalom Bayis, they should be able to see each other, you should be able to have light. That has a great impact on maintaining a peaceful household as well. So we see Hanukkah is relevant for all year round, that the tremendous priority that's given to Shalom is itself along the same kind of svara as Pirsumei Nisa, that we have to do what we can to make sure that it is preserved even when there could be good excuses otherwise. And that's one of the many lessons that comes out really in two ways, just the whole concept of Pirsumei Nisa and what that teaches us about Beradam L'Chavero and all year round, but also more directly that the halacha of Neres Hanukkah being so prioritized and yet still being out-prioritized by Neres Shabbos is a very powerful message to reflect on as well. Okay, so talking about prioritization, so Chamiras Hakanta Meisur, God willing, we will continue tomorrow. And we'll have a game plan to make sure we cover as much as we can as we head towards the end of the semester. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should stay warm and stay dry and stay safe and stay all positive things.